This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. Hey everyone, welcome to Pop Culture Confidential, and welcome back, Eric Anderson, Editor-in-Chief of Awards Watch. It's been so long. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It does feel like it's been forever. I'm really, really glad to be back and talking with you.
You had so many exciting things happen on the show. You guys have started a new podcast at Awards Watch that I urge everyone to listen to. And then you've also had the Rona.
Yes, it finally caught up to me. And you know, the last 2.5 years have been like, hey, I'm good. I don't have it. This is awesome. As everybody around me, you know, that I know did. And then she got me.
She got you. And are you okay? I know that you're you still have a bit of a cough, but.
Yes. No, it's a lot better. It's, you know, you just don't know really what to expect. I hadn't been sick in any way at all for 2.5 years. Not a cold, not anything. So it kind of was like 2.5 years worth of sick all happening in the space of about 2 weeks.
At least it was right after the Oscars, right?
You have no idea. Yeah, exactly that. I was terrified all the way from September through March of like, I'm going to, you know, test positive and not be able to go to events or be at, you know, an event or somewhere and then have to be quarantined pretended. I mean, oh my gosh, I'm very lucky.
We have so much to talk about today. I'm so glad that you're back on. Awards season is back because Cannes is starting next week. So I'm going to talk to you about that. But first, we have Doctor Strange, the kind of unexpected indie hit, Everything Everywhere All at Once. We have incredible buzz for Top Gun Maverick. James Cameron's trailer for Avatar is breaking all these viewing records. Eric, are movies back?
It certainly seems like they are. I mean, I think the numbers for Doctor Strange that came in were pretty darn good. Really, really good. But it was also the first big, I'm putting big in quotes, movie of the summer. So I think sometimes there's a great benefit to that of being early. And summer movies, as we know them, keep getting earlier and earlier. You know, it's not actually summer anymore. It's March and April that we get summer movies, but
winterish.
Yeah. And we did have the Batman as that movie, and that did extremely well too. And then yes, the indie success of Everything Everywhere All at Once is really kind of taking everybody by storm and the conversation around it. I wish there was a little bit less comparison, you know, of things like that movie and Doctor Strange, as it's happening in such a weird way, in an unnecessary way.
So Everything Everywhere All at Once has a $30 million budget. I'm sure that Doctor Strange is what, 10 times?
Sure. But then you have like Jamie Lee Curtis, and I love her, but she's been kind of going on and on comparing the two and like saying Doctor Strange craft budget was more than the budget of Everywhere All at Once. And it's just, why do that? You can celebrate the thing that you like and that you're a part of without having to denigrate something else. And that's just kind of like, that's sort of what we see on Twitter and in film Twitter every single day anyway. I just wish there was less of it, because you can celebrate both things, or you can just celebrate one thing. You don't have to make it that kind of contest. There is so much to be happy about with Everything Everywhere All at Once, and what it means for Michelle Yeoh and Kyu Kwan. That's the narrative right there. That's
kick-ass women in their 60s.
That's the story right there.
Asian American stories in general. Yeah, there's so much to celebrate about that one.
Yeah, I think people grabbed on to the multiverse element of both films so intently that they just kind of can't let go. And, you know, but to your point, yeah, to a large extent, movies are back, and it's hard to really evaluate still because we're not out of the pandemic. We are still in it. I think we just need to recalibrate how we talk about the pandemic, because it's going to be with us probably forever, mm-hmm. in some form or the other. I think we do need to just kind of recalibrate how we think about it.
And everyone is raving about Top Gun. That's going to be the big hit, right?
You know, it was funny. That was the only film at CinemaCon that they showed in its entirety, which was a pretty gutsy thing to do. But clearly Paramount felt they had something. And those initial responses are surprisingly meeting up with the actual reviews. Sometimes you get those
the first kick
early buzz responses, and they're so hyperbolic and so excitable that you kind of have to go into it with a little bit of measured expectation. But yeah, the reviews came in and they were extraordinary.
What do we have here?
Yeah, here I thought we were special.
Fellas, this here's Bagman.
Hangman.
Whatever.
What the hell kind of mission is this?
Everyone here is the best there is. Who the hell are they gonna get to teach us?
Captain Pete Maverick Mitchell. Let me be perfectly blunt. You are not my first choice. You were here at the request of Admiral Kazansky, a.k.a. Iceman. He seems to think that you have something left to offer the Navy. What that is, I can't imagine.
With all due respect, sir, I'm not a teacher. Just want to manage the expectations.
But someone wrote, I think it was an IndieWire, they said that the fact that Top Gun Maverick is so great is one thing, but it's also sort of a symbol of Tom Cruise vision of movies in general, how he's waited with this one and with Mission Impossible, saying that I'm waiting, I want them in theaters.
Tom Cruise is one of the most interesting examples of a star, of a movie star, and one that's lasted this long. Because, I mean, domestic-wise, his box office totals, I mean, I don't want to say they're not bad, but they're not like $400, $500, $600 million movies. I think his max like domestic movie was like $240 or $250, which, you know, in this era seems pretty small, but it's his consistency that has kind of kept him afloat since the 80s, and obviously his international appeal as well. I'm really excited, not so much for the movie, but for how a sequel after this much time is going to fare.
36 years.
It doesn't always work out, you know? 90s nostalgia is pretty strong right now. 2000s is. I don't know about 80s nostalgia right now. We might be past that. But it will be a testament to Cruise and Cruise alone.
And to dads everywhere.
You know, yeah. Although I think this will probably be a less jingoistic movie than the 80s version. I mean, the action movies we got in the 80s were so completely entrenched in the Cold War.
Reagan era, rah-rah.
And Reagan era. I mean, yeah, you extreme rah-rah. So I'll be really curious to see that. And yeah, I mean, just the actual box office and audience response to the movie. It could be his biggest hit.
Hello, and welcome to Guilty Greenie. I feel like we should start off this show by saying it's nearly impossible to be 100% sustainable given the current world we live in.
How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Not a great analogy for a vegetarian, but you know.
We're talking about sustainability, maybe not the best analogy.
Don't eat the elephant is the first rule of the Guilty Greenie.
There's your first challenge of the week. Avoid elephants. What they used to call frugal is now considered sustainable.
That's such an aha moment. Frugal to sustainable.
You can save money and help the planet. That's going to be our new
tagline for sure. Yeah,
you can find Guilty Greenie on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcast platform you prefer. And join us in tackling the Guilty Greenie challenges. Until then, stay curiously green.
Well, that's a good segue because that's coming to Cannes. It seems like it's already going to be have been everywhere by the time it gets there, but it's one of the big things. And so we have Cannes coming this year. It seems to be back to normal pretty much. I haven't read much about any sort of COVID restrictions and everything is in person. In terms of the festival in general, the feeling, the juries, what are your thoughts?
I mean, not a whole lot yet. I think people are really excited by the lineup, at least the main in competition lineup. And I think it's going to be extremely competitive when we get to the awards on the 28th, because we have so many returning Palm winners and directors that have won other top awards. So it's going to be incredibly competitive, which I think is always exciting. I love a competitive year no matter what.
And what about the juries?
The biggest conversation that happened around the jury was the fact that Oscar Farhadi was supposed to be the president. Then he had the plagiarism controversy that happened to him. And even though he was not found wrong, the impact was clearly pretty strong and the timing just was not right. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, Vincent Linden from Titan was chosen as the president, and Farhadi is
a member.
Jury member, which honestly really surprised me that he would do that. I would feel pretty...
You mean get pumped like that?
Yeah, to be demoted and then essentially acquitted. I would feel kind of upset about that. But... I think it's great that Vincent Linden is the head. I mean, we so often have directors as the presidents of the jury. It's not always actors.
And who are some of the other names?
Rebecca Hall, actress and director. Naomi Rapace, Joachim Trier, worst person in the world.
Lots of scandals.
Lodge Lee, Jeff Nichols. It's a really cool jury.
That's the operative word. It's very cool. I think that's, we're going to see that reflected in the choices of movies.
Well, you know, that's the thing. People try and predict generally more what they think the president of the jury is going to lean to, because you never know how the deliberations are going to go. If you have a jury president that's very, very strong and has a forceful voice, or if it is a more democratic jury and everybody kind of has a single vote, essentially. You don't know. Like when Tim Burton was president of the jury and Uncle Boomy won, it was like, of course Uncle Boomy won.
Yeah.
It's totally a Tim Burton kind of movie. It makes perfect sense. And then you have Steven Spielberg and Blue is the Warmest Color winning. And you're like,
really?
Where's the connection? That's actually one of the great things about it. I love when it's completely subverted and you don't know until all is said and done.
Okay, let's get into the movies. What are some of the things that you're really looking forward to and were surprised?
I don't know if there were a lot of surprises exactly, except for Claire Denis, who has never had a good history with Cannes. They have never been very kind to her. Being here is fantastic. Kelly Reichardt, also here in competition, is tremendous. I almost would have expected her to be in like the director's fortnight instead. So I'm thrilled that she's
with
here.
With Michelle Williams starring.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Boy, is she going to have a year. Oh my.
I'm also predicting a big Michelle Williams year.
Yeah.
And she's also in Spielberg's The Fablemans as his mother. She's having a baby. She does incredible interviews. It's going to be sort of the Kristen Stewart of the year, I think.
I think it's going to be more like the Natalie Portman. But we'll see. I mean, it is early, but yeah, I think Michelle Williams is going to have a good year. I think the things that people are the most excited about, and what I'm most excited about, is Park Chan-wook's decision to leave. That was my early prediction on, I think it was the first podcast of the new podcast that we did, as a early Palm winner prediction. I feel like it's almost been a long time coming, kind of, really. And a lot of us had decision to leave in last year's predictions as a potential awards contender. And I do think, I'm not sure about, I think it's movie that has it. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see how that plays out. But we just saw Drive My Car have a distributor with zero awards campaigning experience, zero, able to.
And that went pretty well.
That did pretty darn well. It flourished. Between that and, you know, everything that happened with Coda, you know, I'm going to be attaching less, well, not sure about this kind of thinking, especially at this stage. Mm-hmm. And we have seen so many movies come from Cannes go all the way, whether it is, you know, international feature film or other things. So just anything that wins a prize this year better be on your radar.
And I'm very much looking forward to Corrida with Broker.
Absolutely. Shoplifters was and is one of my favorite films of last
mine too.
Decade. Absolutely incredible. And that's what I mean. We have got
the names such, here are just,
oh my God, David Cronenberg, James Gray, Ruben Östlund, the Dardens again. There are just, yeah, these are just names. This is going to be one of the most competitive, I think, in a long time.
And the movie seems so different. I mean, you have James Gray's Armageddon Time, which seems to be a very personal sort of Roma-esque type movie. And then these other ones that are just everything that we see.
And that
Cronenberg trailer was, that was a trip.
I mean, I think everybody is always going to be excited about a new Cronenberg movie, but I will say this. I wish directors would hold back on saying things like, yes, there's going to be walkouts. People are going to be so grossed about the movie. Just let it happen if it's going to happen. You don't need to gild that lily, because if it doesn't happen, then you look like a weird braggart.
I was just thinking about that, Eric, because one of the movies that's not coming to Cannes, but that you and I have talked about several times, Blonde, Andrew Dominik's movie, he was also just out saying, people are going to hate it, and Bob was like, don't. I was thinking, wait, let us have that opinion on our own.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. We had that and the Cronenberg comments happen within a week of each other, and I'm just like, come on, guys. That might be the case, but it feels like just kind of the wrong kind of pre-campaigning. I don't know. It just feels there's a touch of arrogance to it that I don't like.
And Ruben Östlund is back. It's with Woody Harrelson in the lead.
That is definitely one of the most anticipated, I think. The Serebrennikov as well. I mean, they're just, I don't think almost anything from this list is not going to stir a whole lot of emotion. There's a lot here.
If I put you on the spot before we move on, what do you think will be taking the prizes from In Competition today?
Like I said, I'm sticking with Decision to Leave as the Palm winner. I think either director could go to Kelly Reichardt or Claire
Denis. Park Chan-wook, sorry.
Yes, yeah, for Park Chan-wook. Or Michelle Williams for Best Actress. And again, sight unseen on all of these. Yeah. This is just, you know, hoping, looking, throwing out there. I wonder if Lucas Don't with Close, who was there a few years ago with Girl, if he doesn't sort of become this like young gay con celeb the way that Xavier Dolan became, and kind of starts appearing all the time and winning something all the time. So like, you know, screenplay going to him would track for me if that's the case. Again, it's going to be weird when you have all these previous Palm winners, only one of them is going to win. And then I think everything else is going to kind of look strange. you know, even if it's the Grand Jury Prize, it's going to look strange if you have won one or two palms already, like the Dardenne brothers. If they don't win the palm, it's going to feel, I don't know, like an underachievement.
What happened?
This lineup of directors.
Yeah. I want to mention a few other names that aren't in competition that I want to mention. For example, I was surprised to see Riley Keough's name, her directorial debut, War Pony. I didn't even know that she was directing.
It's kind of great because you have her directorial debut and then you have the Elvis biopic out of competition. That's kind of cool.
She is Elvis' granddaughter, right?
Yes.
No, or great-granddaughter or granddaughter?
Granddaughter.
Yes, granddaughter, exactly. Yeah. I had to think. I know, right? It's Priscilla, and then you have her daughter, Lisa Marie, and she's Lisa Marie's
daughter. Oh, my God, yes.
Yes.
Michael Jackson, Lisa Marie. Goodness gracious.
Yeah, that's... And talking about the Elvis movie, Priscilla was raving about it, which must be incredible for Baz Luhrmann and the whole... I mean, biopics today, you get someone with a bad attitude about it, and it's not a good start. And this is both the key person to have backing up your picture.
There are some who'd make me out to be the villain of this here story.
Just don't let a good thing die.
Are you born with destiny? Or does it just come knocking at your door?
He's a young singer from Memphis, Tennessee. Give him a warm hayride welcome. Mr. Elvis Presley.
It is. Biopics like this are always really interesting, though, when it is about somebody with, you know, massive claim or notoriety. And it depends on where the rights to the music and things like that are. If they're owned by an estate, then they have an enormous amount of creative control about how the story is told. And that can, you know, that can look like Bohemian Rhapsody, where it's pretty one-sided in terms of what the storytelling is. And, you know, it's obviously, if somebody is deceased and the estate does control that, that's how it's going to go. We've got like the Whitney Houston biopic coming out at the end of the year, totally given the green light by the estate. But those kind of things are very heavily colored by the impression that they want to reveal about that person. So I hope it's great. I love Baz Luhrmann so much. And I haven't disliked anything that he's done.
Me too. I'm a huge Baz. I think it's a matter of taste in terms of if you love. Baz Luhrmann has also always gone straight to my heart, but it is an almost 3-hour long, what I've understood, very unusual biopic. So I think it could divide. We'll see.
And if the premiere is anything like the Great Gatsby premiere in 2013, it's going to be really big. That was so much fun. My goodness. I don't know how much money Warner Brothers has right now for that kind of thing, but they could really go all out.
But talking about an estate, another movie I can't wait for, which is a documentary, but that's Brett Morgan's Moonage Daydream about David Bowie, where that estate has given apparently a whole bunch of things we haven't seen. And I'm just hearing incredible things about this, which is also premiering in the midnight screening section.
I mean, I'm really excited for that too. Maybe, hopefully, this might be closer to the future of how we see biopics done, which are not really biopics. You know, obviously the public at large isn't going to gravitate to an experimental documentary style of somebody that they love and music that they love. They want a jukebox musical pretty much, and that's that. But for the rest of us, you know, we can have something like this, which is more cerebral, but we still get to completely enjoy the music at the same time without feeling like we're hitting these beats of every single musical biopic that's ever been
He was born, then he had the mean parents, and then this thing happened, and then the little brother died, and then this
and that. And here's his original band, but had to leave. And every story is exactly the same. It's all the same. And it's presented the same too. There's so little nuance and excitement with how these kind of biopics are presented. So I mean, honestly, that's one of the reasons why I think Baz Luhrmann doing this could inject that kind of craziness and wackiness and excitement and over editing and all of that. Oh, the editing of that clip,
yeah,
that first clip, it's so funny. I loved watching the responses to Twitter that were just like, this looks terrible. What is this? I'm like, have you ever seen a Baz Luhrmann movie?
Apparently
that's
not.
There it is right there. That's it. It's kind of perfect.
No, I've been saying this for a while. I mean, even with a film like Spencer or, you know, Blonde, which I'm looking forward to, what's interesting now is that more and more directors are getting and writers are getting funding for actually doing their own take on a celebrity.
Yeah, it's certainly become more, you know, streamer friendly to get those kinds of projects. So as messy as Warner Brothers has been the last few years, I think it's commendable and absolutely audacious that they've stuck with Baz Luhrmann and, you know, gave him however much they gave him to do this movie, because there's no way it's not a massive, massive budget. I mean, it's probably like $200 million.
And then we have another documentary about another celeb. That's the Jerry Lee Lewis Trouble in Mind documentary, which is Ethan Coen. So not Joel this year. What's going on with Ethan and Joel splitting up like this? Do you have any insight as to?
I wish I did. I might actually be able to get some.
Oh, good.
And you'll if tell I do, me. I will. But yeah, it is really kind of talk about, you know, breaking up from the band. This is really interesting. And I think people kind of, you know, want to gravitate to some type of strife, but I don't think there is any.
Which is probably not. I mean, they probably just have different interests at the moment, but there's like, what? No. you want the dream of them together.
Well, it's just funny that it's taken all of this time for them to kind of separate and make their own thing. I mean, it's been 84 since Blood Simple, and only now in 2021 and 2022 they're doing their own separate thing. So I think people do kind of want to, you know, wonder and think something bad is happening.
In 5-10 years, I want them to come together again and make the movie about that breakup, or the metaphor about what exactly happened.
It has to be documentary style. It has to be okay. Like Sparks Brothers kind of style or something, and someone else has to make it. I mean, they're so secretive anyway and private. So, I don't even know if anybody will ever really get the truth as to why they're doing separate things and when they'll come back together.
And I want to mention George Miller. What do you know about his, what section is that?
It's just out of competition. I don't know. I'm really kind of upset that it's out of competition. It's getting like an August 31st release date. No, I don't feel good.
Do you mean that you have a feeling that it's not good?
Maybe, or that they don't have faith in it? I don't know.
It's called 3,000 Years of Longing. Who's in it?
Well, I mean, Tilda Swinton and Idris Elba with like elf ears. And obviously this is not, you know, a mainstream film. It's supernatural. It's about a djinn who's like a genie. I don't know.
Or you have a weird feeling, a tingling.
I guess it's just a weird feeling. And it's MGM, who is now owned by Amazon. And I think after last season, because MGM, who's really most famous for the James Bond series, had been very quiet in terms of its releases and certainly was not an awards player for decades, really. And then suddenly burst last season with House of Gucci and Cyrano and Licorice Pizza, all of these movies that had a whole lot of Oscar potential, only some really kind of panned out. And I wonder, and they have a lot of films again this year. They have like 5 or 6 or 7 films this year. There might be a pullback on how they prioritize. We still don't know what type of impact Amazon will have on those releases, but I don't know. An out of competition slot and an August 31st release means it has no other festival presence, and it feels just going to be like it's a quiet dump. And that doesn't necessarily reflect on the quality of the film. I think it's just how MGM is going to be able to manage its fall.
They don't have faith in it. They're not putting it front and center.
It doesn't seem like it. But then again, you know, they kind of crammed everything that they could at the end of last year with how they rolled out their movies and really botched the Cyrano rollout in the worst way possible.
Yeah.
And then House of Gucci flopped with the Oscars too. Licorice Pizza was the only thing to really survive. So I think they might be licking their wounds and really having to recalibrate.
So since it's your big Palme d'Or prediction, let's talk a bit more about Park Chan-wook's decision to leave. It's a detective story. The detective falls in love with a widowed prime suspect of his latest murder investigation. That sounds good.
It does. It sounds, you know, it's a pretty traditional, cool story that we have seen many, many, many times, all the way back to film noir. I mean, this is a film noir staple of a storyline, but it's Park Chan-wook, so.
In his hands.
So I think we're going to see some really exciting things. I'm excited for the performances, Tang Wei and Park Hae-yeol. I want to see them be really in the conversation come later, you know, in award season. Mm-hmm. I want this to be the kickoff. So I'm super excited.
Those were some of the ones that I had on my studio. Do you have anything you want to bring up?
I mean, in the other sections, Director's Fortnight, the new Mia Hansen Love, One Fine Morning, the new Alex Garland with Jesse Buckley, which is coming out pretty soon.
That's the one called Men, right?
And that's Men, already has reviews out that are pretty good. Critics Week looks fine. We've got the When You Finish Saving the World from Jesse Eisenberg, which is at Sundance. Pretty good.
I didn't like it.
I thought it was okay. Julianne Moore, obviously perfect because she's always flawless.
She's always flawless, but it was just a pretentious. You have to go back and listen to my show with Ryan and you'll see my kind of vomit on that one.
Yes, and I get it. I think what we're really going to be focusing on mostly are those in competition titles and the few that are out, like 3,000 Years and Elvis, because the names are just so huge. They're just undeniable. But I mean, thankfully, I've got a fantastic group headed to Cannes this year. I'm pronouncing it two different ways in this podcast, and I apologize. So we have a lot of coverage, and I'm really excited. And it's, my God, it's already next week, less than a week.
You guys go to awardswatch.com for that coverage of the movies we've talked about, and it's going to be really interesting to hear what they have to say. So there you'll get all your news and reviews there.
And there's even the Irma Vep series with Alicia Vikander.
Olivier Assayas, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. The response early on hasn't been great because people are like, why is this getting a remake when we have a perfect film? What's going on? So I think it's going to get a lot of attention, good or bad.
Eric, thank you so much. It's so good to see you again. And this was just a good little countdown, and I'll get you on the other side, maybe.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to have you on the AW podcast as it continues to grow.
Well, I'm ready when you guys want me. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.